This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Our next guest died. We just fell in love with the guy. I read the book and then the stories. And that's, you know, all of us. The favorite thing in the world is a great storyteller. And then if you have a great story to tell, you're Gianni Russo. You grew up in New York City, a boy, had a hard start. Sick with polio, you meet a guy who changes your life, Frank Costello, who shows you how to run numbers for him, and that starts you on a journey that is so unpredictable and unlikely that if it were coming from anybody else and there weren't people around to go, no, that's Johnny. Him. And you'd go, no, there's no way this happened this way.
Yeah.
But it actually did.
Born December 12th in Manhattan and raised in Little Italy in Staten Island, New York, our next guest is a man of many life experiences. He overcame polio as a child, spent time as a teen working as a runner for mob boss Frank Costello, going on to act in the movie classic, The Godfather. He's owned a club and casino in Las Vegas, owned his own wine brand, worked as an actor in television and film, had sex with Marilyn Monroe. And that's just scratching the surface of one of the most interesting life stories we've ever heard, as told in his book, Hollywood Godfather, My Life in Movies and the Mob. And now you can hear him every week on his podcast, available at HollywoodGodfatherPodcast.com. Please welcome Gianni Russo.
Hey, Johnny, how have you been?
I've been good, man. How you doing?
Good, man. I heard that you were back on the show again today. We were talking about it, and you got the podcast, and I pulled the book back out and started rereading it for probably the third time, and it's still moments I just put the book down and think about it and the story, and then go back and reread it slower again, because it's just...
That's wild.
You've had 15 lives already.
Well, you know, the thing is this, it's amazing the reaction that you have that's been reacted that way in 7 countries now. I'm getting calls from all over the world. They really love the book, fortunately. And a news bulletin for you, Nick Vallelongo from Green Book, who won the Oscar last year for Best Screenplay and Best Picture, is now adapting it to a 10-hour series along with Colin Wilson from the Avatar fame.
Congratulations, man. I knew it was coming. I didn't know if it would be straight to the theaters, or if it would be... But I think it's too much. You can't put it into a 90-minute movie. It has to be like a 10-part series.
Well, David O. Russell, of his fame, he tried to do it into a movie. In fact, he wrote a 72-page script and realized he didn't get past my childhood. It's better as a 2... I mean, business-wise, it's great for me, because they're going to stream 10 with a 10 option. So
now, last time we spoke, we talked about who you'd want to play you in a movie. It was you were thinking maybe Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, but now that we're going to television, I don't think he'd do it. I don't know, because you know he's so young. He's not like De Niro or Pacino. They're doing The Irishman. They're streaming it. But I don't know. We were kicking around, maybe going with an unknown and surrounding it
sure
with major stars.
Well, look,
like Chaz Palminteri just had the ring to play Frank Costello. So, you know, I got Charlize Stallone to play Marilyn Monroe. See, the way, as you know, the book is written, there's cameos. So I think all those cameo roles, as I progress through life, can be great film stars.
Well,
and maybe use a Johnny Russo unknown.
For those who don't know, your story... it starts out, you know, in a hospital as a kid when you're sick, but the pivotal point in your life is meeting Frank Costello, and he's...
Oh, my God, yeah.
And you're, you know, what were you selling? Were you selling newspapers, or were you selling pencils?
No, I was selling ballpoint pens.
Ballpoint pens, that's right. And he would never take one, but he'd give you $5, but he'd always touch your bad arm.
Yeah, well, he always touched his shoulder.
Yeah.
because my arm you couldn't touch because I was that obvious to hold my cigar box with the pens and the money in it because I only had mobility in my right arm. So for that guy, what he did for me is amazing because I was with him then. You forget, I was with him since 55 to 73.
And
so that's a wild time.
He takes a kid in New York City on the street corner, and because you busted him out, because you realized he was rubbing you for good luck in a way, and you called him on it.
Well, yeah, that really pissed me off. No, but he was using me as a good luck charm. I thought the guy liked me.
Yeah.
You can imagine being 5 years in Bellevue. It's a mental institution. The good news, it's still here. And I walk 3 or 4 miles a day. Many times I find myself gravitating towards it. But I tell you, it's remarkable even now, me just standing looking at it.
Yeah.
It comes to my eyes. I can't believe I spent 5 years in there.
Yeah, no. But it led you to where you are today. I mean, it's all part of that journey. So you tell him, get your hand off me. I'm not your good luck charm. He laughs because you show the balls, throws you 100, and says, meet me, my friend, tomorrow by the tower. And you do. And that becomes the beginning of you. You were helping him. You were carrying some information from place to place, some numbers.
Oh, I was all over the place. Yeah, then after that, he elevated me during the Kennedy elections. I was traveling all over the country. And in fact, I was with Nikki Cervella in Yorktown in Kansas City. That's the first time I met Corky Cervella.
Wow.
The election. In fact, I spent a lot of time there. They had a club called Mothers.
Sure.
That. You're probably too young.
No, but I remember my uncle speaking of it.
Yeah.
And so.
That's what happened because then I got friendly with every mob boss in the country. And then, after the Kennedys really getting back what they were going to say, because Joe Kennedy had a meeting with Costello, and he said he wanted his son to become president, and if he became president, the first thing they would do was invade, the Bay of Pigs, and invade all the casinos and take them from Castro and give them back to them.
Right.
It was a win-win. The mob gets, Cuba back, and the kid becomes president.
But Bobby invents RICO.
Well, the mistake was Bobby. I met Bobby several times. In fact, I met Bobby in Marcellus' backyard down in New Orleans when he came to arrest him. I was there for a barbecue. And this guy was a real idiot. I mean, he destroyed the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he got his brother killed.
He certainly did. And Jenny, tell me this. Is anybody upset? Because, look, and these are legitimate stories, all verified. I mean, you there's no chance you could tell these stories if it wasn't okay, I imagine. But nobody's been upset. Everybody's been okay.
I actually flew to Sicily. I wanted to make sure they were okay. I flew to Sicily, and they read the book. And then I had to wait another year. They said, wait one more year until this guy's sick. Because I didn't want to not include everybody. So, out of respect, I waited a year. It worked out well.
So,
in fact, the last guy that died, you won't believe, I was worried about him because I talk about Junior Persico in the book with Jimmy Conway. He tried to set me up with that stupid story telling me the guy's girlfriend was
his daughter. Yeah.
Almost got me killed. But Junior was the only one that was still alive, but he was doing life. And I knew he was sick. And as luck would have it, the book came out March 12th. Junior died March 7th.
Yeah.
That was it.
Well, and in the story, going to Jimmy Conn, talking about the movie The Godfather, which the way you got in that movie, you wanted to be an actor, good-looking guy. You obviously had the ability, but you guys had to put a little heat on the film industry when they were coming to shoot in the neighborhood and down around Little Italy. And so you get the part. There's a discussion. But Marlon Brando decides he doesn't like you for that part. And that's where you took him aside. And I thought I didn't want to tell this story in its entirety on the show yet because I realized we'd skipped over it. I just thought it was so funny. So you hear him go to the director and say, I don't want him, Jenny Russo, on the movie. We need a different kind of an actor, and this pisses you off.
Well, you wanted a professional actor because
yeah.
He came to me and he said to me, you're a big TV actor. I said, no. He said, you got a big motion picture coming out. I said, no, I don't. He said, well, you're not on Broadway, and everybody on Broadway. I said, what is this, a quiz show? So he said to me, who'd you study with? I said, study what? What are you talking about? And that's when he called Coppola over, and he said, you got to reconsider this. And I never broke down the script about the importance of my character. So he laid it out. He said, he marries my daughter. He gets my son, Sonny, killed by the Barzinis. Michael has to join the family and leave the country. He says, you got to get a better actor. And I'm saying to myself, this guy's trying to get me fired. So before he went any further, I just wanted to pull him aside out of respect to Aaron. I don't want to embarrass him in front of everybody. I mean, I'll kill you, Marlon Brando. I got money in my pocket. I'm over here. Don't abuse me. So I walk into the back. I said, let me just tell you something, okay, Mr. Brando. I have all due respect. I know who you are, but you get me fired. Listen to what I'm about to say. You get me fired, I will suck on your heart right here and you'll bleed out. How dare you do this to me?
That's so good.
He stepped back. He looked at me. He said, you could do this part. That was great. He thought I was that. I was ready to knock it out.
He was an instant fan. That's fantastic. And so I'm reading this book, by the way, if you just joined the show, the great Jenny Russo. It's a life well lived on every level. And the thing, it's like you go through these stories. Like, it talks about you and Zsa Zsa Gabor, and Merv Griffin is in the room, and he stands up and he announces to everybody that you guys have just become engaged. At that time, how old was Zsa Zsa Gabor at that time?
Oh, my God. She could have been my grandmother.
So he thinks it's a funny prank.
Well, I just, you know, my ego, even then, he's come on, it's the premiere of Maine. Army Archer was televising live on one side of the sidewalk. He was televising on the other side. He says, pull up with her. And I said, okay. But I should have known, because Merv was a great practical joker. But whatever. Hey, listen, it got publicity. We're still talking about it now.
So
every facet of my life, it just keeps on going. And, you know, I'm going to be 77 in this December. I can't believe it.
You look great.
And I'm doing a one-man show right now.
Well,
I'm writing a one-man show, and the Mohegan Sun's casinos just bought it for every casino. My friend Tom Cantone, who hired me years ago to open Trump Marina, you believe this, in 96. He's now the head of all the marketing and buying for all the Mohegan Sun casinos. There's eight of them.
Congratulations on that. So well, look, Frank.
You heard about my show, and my first show is March 7th.
Congratulations. Hey, well, let me. I want to go to this Zsa Zsa story real quick, if it's okay with you. So then she's pushing up on you, like you guys are drinking, and she's made it very clear she's enamored of you. And
I don't know how many people know Beverly Hills. After 11 o'clock in Beverly Hills, there's nowhere to go. So I think, you know what? Let me go. Let me go back home. I went back home with her. Which is a crazy story. To this day, I still don't know. But so she goes, she said, let me get into something comfortable. And she did. She left me in her bedroom. And we're drinking champagne. It was a nice night. And it was the old Howard Hughes mansion in Bel Air. So I thought that was great, too. I mean, Howard Hughes' old house. I like experiences.
Right. Yeah.
So she said, get comfortable. So I'm like a dog. I jumped in bed. I got a dressing room bed. Then somebody put their hand through, like opening the door, and shut off the light. And in the twilight, what would be Zsa Zsa Gabor comes, not even a 10, an 11, climbs in bed with me, does me in, leaves the room, and 2 minutes later, here comes Zsa Zsa Gabor, like she was there. She sent in a beard. Amazing young lady, whoever it was. But I guess she just wanted to get the reputation that she's a great lover. I don't know.
But isn't that...
And I called Merv the next day. I said, Merv, you know what? What are they? I know. I said, where's the girl? He said, no, I can't tell you that.
God, it's just the insanity of the world you live in. Because you're standing in these two different worlds. Where you grew up in New York with these guys, real guys. And then you've got this Hollywood thing that half of it is so fake. And it's just all
perception,
and this—it's got to the entire time. You got to be looking at these guys like they're goddamn aliens, you know? Because the way you grew up.
Oh, I know.
You know,
especially Brando and Tony Curtis and all those guys. They're all switch hitters.
Yeah.
The girls were hitting on me, and the guys were hitting on me. I'm saying to myself, what's going on in this world? It's so crazy. And now look at the world we're in. Forget about it. I don't know whether to put a suit on or a dress.
Well, listen, you got to do you, and you are. I mean, Johnny, listen, it's funny because now after I got excited about the book, if your name came up, I would try to go, hey, look, if you haven't read this book, it's incredible. And then it wouldn't matter. Like, it could be almost anybody. They go, oh, no, I've heard of him. Oh, no, I have a friend who knows him. It's the, you know, 7 degrees of separation of Russo. Like, you have lived such a life with the movies and the mob and everything you've done with your, with, you know, your involvement in Vegas. And, you know, one of the stories that started out, how interesting you were to me, was the girl getting cut with a broken bottle at your club. And the guy's going to kill her. Like, it's it's going to be a murder in front of you. So you jump in front of this guy.
Well, unfortunately, I had to because I could see she needed care. He broke the bottle and stuck it right in her face, man. And anybody that's listening even cuts themselves shaving. It never stops bleeding.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to get it to the hospital. And it was funny because Steve Sciarippa from Blue Blood fame and The Sopranos, he was my doorman. He was going to school at UNLV. I used to hire a lot of the big kids from the football team and all that to be on my door. I mean, we had no violence. It could have been a tuxedo. So I called the door, and I said, we got a problem on 7th. He said, no, man, that guy's crazy. I said, get over here. I ain't going over there. I said, well, thank God. Look, I hired you to do this. So I had to get involved. Because I went over there then, and I'd like to declare, because I don't know if there'll be a guy who's around, maybe around friends of ours.
Right.
So I told him, you hear these sirens? They're coming for you. He said, what do you mean, Mom? I said, what do you mean, Mom? Where the hell are you from? And I didn't see that he had the bottle in his hand yet. So he went for me, for my neck. And thank God I was agile enough. I bent back. He put 82 stitches across my chin line. Thank God it was my chin line because I'm so vain. But then I said, you're going to get out of here in a black bag, or you're going to walk out the door. It's your choice. Get out of here. I got to get this girl to the hospital. And he said, F you. I said, F me. So I put two right between his eyes. I'm looking at a hole in this man's head. And he's still looking at me. Only to find out later, the coroner said he had so much cocaine, it took him maybe 30 more seconds to close down. But I tell you, those 30 seconds, it's pretty scary when you know you just shot a guy and he's still looking at you.
Yeah, and you think, I got to get a bigger gun.
Oh, yeah, that's why I made that decision real fast. I was going to get a bigger caliber gun.
And you know, you think then what's going to happen now? Because now the cops are coming. You know, there's been a shooting. And they saw clearly that you were completely in the right. It was all self-defense. And that's, I mean, just...
Well, but the good news, Lois Manis, the girl that got stabbed, vouched for him. She said, he saved my life. I don't know what this guy's going to do. It was so funny because I got a letter from John Gotti many months after that incident. And I guess he wanted the warden to read it. He said, I never killed anybody. I know this guy killed a couple of people, and you're giving him a dinner. They flew me to Washington, had a big dinner for me.
So, were you ever nervous with like stuff? Because, you know, because that's how it would be, right? They'd come at you like a friend. You ever worried that you got sideways with somebody like Wood Jr.?
Well, you know, I never, after I got out of that ward, I spent 5 years in there. I watched 27 kids die in my little ward alone. I mean, it hardens you up. And to survive, just to get out of there. I mean, I don't want to tell them how I got out, you know. But, you know, it changes your life. I was so bitter, man. I could have really went the wrong way. And thank God for Costello.
Yep.
And he pulled me in. And he said, you're smarter than that. Well, I could have got very violent. I could have become a serial killer.
But, yeah. No, it's this story, this 10-part series that's going to be coming up. And I pray that it does get made because it's such an interesting book. If you're just joining us, Gianni Russo, G-I-A-N-N-I, Russo, R-U-S-S-O, The Godfather book, The Hollywood Godfather. You're going to read it more than once, I promise you. The stories, there's so many stories, and they're so genuinely true and so well written. I can't wait to see how they managed to get it all in even 10-hour-long segments, because it's a lot to put in there.
Yep. Thank God. And I'm still going.
Yeah. Dude, 77, and you still got your place that Costello gave you?
I'm sitting in his living room right now.
Hey, listen, we spoke before. You know, I'm going to...
Are you going to come up Thanksgiving, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll be there in Thanksgiving.
Well, maybe that Friday afterwards we should have dinner here.
Listen, anywhere you would like. You know what? It would be my absolute honor to buy you a dinner anywhere. But just if you only have time for a drink or a coffee, whatever.
No, the best restaurant in New York is my house.
I would absolutely love that. I would never want to be in imposition, but we'll catch up before then for sure.
All right, please. Thank you.
I always thank you for coming on the show, Jenny. And his podcast, it's the Hollywood Godfather podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, all of that. If this was interesting to you, you want to find that.
There's a new show every Wednesday night. It's really getting heavy now. I'm putting my 36th show up.
That's great. Well, all the stories that couldn't fit in the book, all the other ones that somebody else is going to bring up that maybe weren't your story when you have a friend come by and you start talking about it all connects, right? Like when old friends get together, all those different stories that interconnect with each other, that it'll make an hour go by in 10 seconds.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's a lot of fun, baby. You'll enjoy it. Try it once. It becomes addictive.
All right, listen, I will for sure reach out to you and we'll have you back on. We'll talk more about the podcast. I'm going to go back and listen to a bunch of the episodes and we'll have you back on and we'll talk about those, all right?
All right, be my pleasure. Thank you so much, Sean.
I appreciate you, sir. An interesting guy.
Those are just some of the stories. Imagine what you could talk to each other about face to face.
See, that's the thing. You got to get off the phone. I got to get
limitless.
Him in here. I got to get him off the phone and in here so you can see each other. You know, that's...
Of course.
It's you get so excited, it's hard to not step on each other.
But and you're just more comfortable when you just sit with someone, whether it's in here or anywhere else, you just kind of become more relaxed and they just keep going, especially when you're not on a time constraint,
well,
too.
Well, I'm looking at just a couple notes. So we talk about James Caan at Jilly's, legendary place in New York City, and Junior... almost got sideways because Jimmy Caan wanted to take a dump on Jenny. So he told him, hey, that's his daughter. It was his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And he got, thought he was being a wise guy. When he was going to cut out Marlon Brando's heart, when Jimmy Caan broke his ribs, or we could talk about when he was going to have a sniper shoot him on the carpet of when The Godfather opened up because he thought it would, this is how crazy he got. He knew it would make him a bigger star. They had a sniper that worked for the mob. He called that guy. And then called his doctor friend and said, this guy can wing me. And it'll make all the news in the world because there was an attempted hit on the red carpet walk going to the Godfather mm-hmm. movie. He was going to engineer his own hit. And the doc had to go, look, you don't know where the bullet's going to go. Look, he may just like that, or it may bang off a bone and shoot you in the noggin.
Yeah.
So they didn't do that part, as you know.
The best part is that he pulled Marlon Brando aside and Brando thought he was acting.
Yeah. Or Brando got smart at that moment and realized, oh, you are good at this.
Yeah.
I give up on my point, which may have been. Did you know? And I don't know if we ever got to talk about this because it takes a bit to really explain. But markers in Vegas, what he did, basically he bought debt. He bought debt from degenerate gamblers, people that they were owed money. So he would take the. You make a deal for a marker. You go, I'm going to give you 25%. I want 25% of what I collect for you.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of 90 days, I'll buy all these markers, if whatever I haven't got. So he'd go show up in Beverly Hills, some deadbeat doctor who wouldn't pay his marker in Vegas, and show up and be like, make an appointment, like at 10:30, and be like,
good morning.
Yeah, we have a problem.
Pay me or I shake you till you
pay
me.
Well, and he had an incredible amount of money coming in buying markers for these deadbeat guys in Vegas. And I think at the time that was pretty legal. But Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli and the food fights and going to the Vatican. He got sideways with Pablo Escobar when they were laundering money over there. Yeah. But the Zsa Zsa Gabor story.
I love that. That's so boomerang.
And he talks about how with Zsa Zsa, they were at the table and he had his hand and she kind of grabbed his hand, put it on her leg, and he goes, here's what I didn't realize, because she wore her clothes so well at her age. She was such a big girl at that point. Her leg was flat on top. He couldn't get to the round part. You see what I'm saying?
Like no, I do.
He was on the and he goes, I was just shocked. He goes, all the girls' legs, he goes, you could feel the round part. He goes, it was just flat like a table where my hand was. And then go on that, and he's like, oh, I'm going to do it. She's like, darling, and he peels off, gets in bed, and the dorms, and it's clearly no chance. It's actually Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Thank God.
They never turn the lights on. It's dark. Get it on. She leaves. Zsa Zsa comes back to play it off like he said. Like,
it's amazing.
Wasn't that incredible?
Appearances are everything.
It's the weirdest. I mean, the whole thing. And this is like, I'm telling you, I maybe touched on 10% of the stories in here. It's you've got to read this book.
Every part of his life so far that you hear, the childhood alone is remarkable.
And I actually believe he's like, come over.
I do. I actually thought the same thing.
Yeah, no, he said, when you put him on hold, when I talked to him, he goes, do not forget about me. Have him call me.
I will.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a half afraid to.
No.
Not afraid. No. I'm afraid of him sort of way.
Like, but afraid, like, spending the couple days at Henry Winkler's, that's something you would disrespect something or do something.
I just don't want him to think I'm an idiot. You know what I mean? Like, guys like that. He reminds me of my great uncles. And so.
You know it's only for one dinner, though.
And not because they had similar lives. My great uncles weren't like that. They were just very important to me, you know, and I had a great deal of respect for them and the way they had lived their own lives. Mm-hmm. And so it's that kind of a thing where you go, man, I just don't want to meet a guy and have him be like, you know, it turns out you're just a radio jerk.
Mm-hmm. You were so cool over the phone.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Can you imagine getting tossed out of his apartment by him in front of your girlfriend?
Well,
the guy's
some
like,
ne'er-do-well.
You gotta go. You can stay.
You stay here. You bounce down the stairwell.
Yeah. You're
going to vouch for this?
you have to go. You have a choice. And I'm like, uh-oh. She's like, you know, I like older men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You'd want me to do this.
Yeah. I'm outside, just looking up at the second story window over a Mulberry Street.
He throws you a couple bucks, thinking you are the courier.
Throws me a biscotti out the window. Yeah. Well, get yourself a coffee. Come back in 2 hours.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.